Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Minneapolis. With me is Greg Velasquez in Des Moines. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. The USA will face England on Thursday afternoon and Italy after that on Tuesday, and we're here to talk about the roster and who we'd like to see in the starting 11. We'll talk about the U-20s later in the episode, but first let's get into the senior team. Big picture, these are good opportunities for the boys to play marquee opponents. There'll be a lot of eyeballs on the England game at Wembley. Everybody's going to want to put their best foot forward, as they say. A good way to, as a player, impinge on the consciousness of the footballing public in England is to beat their national team. So let's do that. Let's start with notable absences. Whose absence has you annoyed, Mr. Velasquez?
Absences on the U.S. side that I'm really getting more and more annoyed by, I'm very annoyed by, is Jonathan Amon. When the roster was released, I think it was all but assumed that he would be, that the reason Amon was omitted is because he would be joining the U-20 team. Even that sort of annoyed me, but it's like, okay, fair enough, I guess. Like, this is how they've decided to allocate their resources. Mm-hmm. Well, then the U-20s announced their changes in between rounds, and Jonathan Amon not among them. My frustration reemerged.
Yeah, I guess there's a plausible scenario there that Amon, you know, they allocated the resources in the way that you described, Amon with the U-20s to help Tab Ramos get over the finish line in World Cup qualifying. The plausible scenario is that he was not released by his club at the 11th hour. You know, that sort of is going around. And I think Brian Schreda even reported that he wasn't released by his club. And frankly, if I'm FC Nordsjælland, I'm not going to release Jonathan Amon for a U-20 tournament. He's had a little bit of a history of injuries. He's one of their prized assets. Doesn't make sense from their perspective to let him come to Florida and play Costa Rica and Honduras. So then the question is, like, why wasn't he with the national team? Why isn't he with the national team?
And right. Because they can't prevent him from joining the senior team in an international window. So it goes back to how we have to sort of also assume that there's always these sort of, deal-making and sort of relationship tending between the national team and the various clubs. So then we've got to try to figure out, well, like, you know, would it have been possible to sort of leverage Nordsjælland to, all right, well, you're going to release him for one or the other. So if you're not going to give him to us for the U-20s, we're going to go ahead and take him for the senior team. But that's obviously not what happened. And then there's also the even sort of extra little wrinkle in that the last time Amon played for Nordsjælland, he came out at halftime, and then the game right before this window, he was on the bench but didn't appear after he'd been starting for them every game since he got back from his injury, probably early September. So is there some kind of a minor injury that, you know, the U.S. just didn't pursue him because Nordsjælland maybe said, hey, lay off this guy for this window, he's coming back from a little tweak?
Right. All these things are possible. It's even possible that he could be called up to the national team, you know, after the England game, or, you know, anything could happen, I suppose. But it is disappointing that he's not there. Right. It's like some government that isn't very transparent.
So I'm still frustrated. It's not necessarily like I'm going to at least give extend a little bit of the benefit of the doubt to both club and national team that there's things that we might not know about that are going on. In any event, it's frustrating to not see Amon included, because I thought Amon, for his first national senior team cap against Peru, was had a very bright showing. I think you obviously agree. You put together a nice thread of clips of his involvement in that game. So it's just frustrating because time is sort of running out, not necessarily in the 2022 cycle, but in the build-up to the Gold Cup, which is an immediate target of us getting a team and a group put together to win that tournament. There's not going to be a lot of time to get the non-MLS guys into camps.
Right, there's one camp left, and that's in March. So that's a little bit of a bummer, and we obviously agree on this. I just think he offers some cut and thrust, to borrow a term from you, that we don't have a lot of, and I would argue maybe even Timmy Weah doesn't have on the wing, just a pure ability to create terror for the defense. Amon has that. That's a valuable asset. I thought it was clearly a valuable asset against Peru. The value of it was illustrated by the way our attack fell apart when Amon came off the field, which we've already discussed in detail. So bummer he's not there. Not necessarily anybody's fault. It could be an innocuous thing where he's injured, like you mentioned.
Yeah, but Amon's definitely one that it would have been really great to see, because we already got a little bit of a glimpse of what he offers, and it is what he showed in that game, at least, was senior team quality. So really need to get him more minutes to confirm that he can sort of do that consistently. This would have been a nice camp to do that. I mean, he's what, probably 2.5 hours away, travel time from London, and even less from Belgium. So,
He could literally walk
Amon, I
there.
will miss him. He would, if he left now, he would get there before you got to Des Moines, if you left right now.
It's true. He would have to go through the channel, but, or he could swim. It's not impossible. Any other absences that are bugging you?
I'm still a little bit bugged by Knauss, and it's one where we brought so many holding midfielders, and he didn't even make those. If we just brought four, if we just brought McKennie and Adams and Acosta and even Trapp, we'd be like, okay, well, we brought four and he didn't make, but we brought like eight holding mids, and he couldn't crack the eight. So again, there might be other things going on. When guys have just played a full season, you sort of never know what condition they're in. But I hope it's not evidence that Ernie Stewart and U.S. Soccer don't rate Knauss, because I sure rate Knauss after the past 3 months.
Yeah. Well, you watched his playoff performance against the Columbus Crew when DC United lost pretty closely, and I gather you were impressed. Tell me what you saw.
I see a guy who really just doesn't put a foot wrong on both sides of the ball. So obviously he doesn't have Tyler Adams' range or ability to influence the game as thoroughly as Tyler Adams does, but I don't think anyone else does. But Knauss was—he's just really clean, and he actually has a little bit of like a disguise. When he's on the ball, so he's able to sort of pick out some passes that they might be simple. They're not necessarily breaking defenses open, but his pass will get a guy in a good position with more time than you would than sort of he might have expected to get, because the pass was a little bit unexpected. And these are like 10, 15-yard passes,
I'm a
just
big
short
fan of
range
those.
stuff.
I'm a huge fan of
Yeah,
those kinds of
just
passes.
short range stuff that he kind of creates these little unexpected windows. So I think he's clean. I think he just has really clean footwork on the ball. I think his positional sense is very good. Again, just a guy who I really think could be a solid guy in a 23, backing up the more our more favored holding mids of McKennie and Adams.
Right. It's a little weird that Knauss wasn't included. There were a lot of calls for him to be called up, and Areola was not called up either, and neither was Chris
Bill
Durkin.
Hamid, yeah.
Well,
Oh,
Bill
go ahead,
Hamid
yeah.
and Chris Durkin wasn't called up to the U-20, so DC United was 0 for 4 here. Maybe there's something going on. Maybe they're going on tour or something.
Right. Like, yeah, that's again, we don't get full, clear explanations for some of these things, where it'd be great if they just came out and said, no, this was a sporting decision, and we just don't think Knauss rates or Areola rates, or we just want to get looks at some of these other guys. But yeah, we're just sort of left to wonder if he's rated or not, and if it'll matter once the new manager comes in.
A few more shouts for inclusion that were not included. I guess the aforementioned Areola, Alfredo Morales at Fortuna Düsseldorf. He's a midfielder, kind of a box-to-box guy. Manuel Sabi at Hobro Ike, goal scoring winger slash striker. Emerson Heineman at Hibs in the Scottish Premier League, sort of a long time favorite of watchers of youth U.S. national teams. He plays as sort of a box to box slash 10 midfielder. Does any of those absences move the needle for you?
I think Sabi moves the needle for me a little bit. And I know we are getting Romain Gall, and I just feel like we're sort of just using these guys interchangeably since they're all playing in those Scandinavian leagues, and they all sort of have just come onto the scene. But it matters because we're looking for attackers. Like, we have Pulisic as a winger, and that's sort of our only confirmed lights out, like, dangerous player. Weah, I think, is the next guy, and he's a ways down. And we now know, I think everyone believes that we can rely on Weah, and he's probably penciled into most people's starting lineups. But,
yeah,
you know, he's only played, you know, 7 or 8 games with the national team. It's not like we have a ton of data on him either. It'd be nice to see in any player sort of with an attacking pulse, again, just to collect a little bit more data. And I guess maybe that's the role that Luca De La Torre is filling as sort of an experimental attacking player. So if Kenny Seff warrants a call-up after the performance he had for the national team, combined with the fact that he's, you know, he's playing a minimal role on his club team at Anderlecht in Belgium, it just seems like, you know, if we're after attacking players, then it seems like you might take a chance on Sabi rather than bringing Seff back in.
Yeah. We'll get into Seff a little bit more later. Let's start with the goalkeepers, and Zach Steffen dropped for injury. He looked like, I think he looked like he was a little bit hobbled in that Red Bulls win on Sunday. Didn't quite look like himself, and sure enough, he's dealing with something, so he's off the roster. That leaves Brad Guzan and Ethan Horvath as the originally called up goalkeepers, and then young Klinsmann. Jonathan Klinsmann was a late add to replace Steffen.
Yeah, I think this would be a good chance to get Ethan Horvath 90 minutes in one of the two games. Maybe Guzan plays one, and then we send him home for his playoff game prep. But my original projection for this was none of the MLS guys, and that it would have been Horvath and Klinsmann as the two called up. So I'm totally fine with this goalkeeping trio.
Yeah, I imagine we'll see Guzan start on Thursday and then go home, and Horvath start on Tuesday with Klinsmann on the bench.
That seems like a good use of the window for our goalkeepers.
Let's talk about center backs. John Brooks, Matt Miazga, Cameron Carter-Vickers, Aaron Long, and Walker Zimmerman are the call-ups. I feel like this is suddenly a position of concern for the national team. John Brooks has been a traveling traffic cone show in Germany lately, and Wolfsburg keeps losing. Brooks had a pretty bad game against Hanover on Friday to the benefit of his national team teammate, Bobby Wood. And Matt Miazga appears very much to be on the outs in Nantes, playing with the reserves, not even getting in the 18 for the first team. CCV's not getting minutes at Swansea City. He is on the bench every time at least and has gotten some minutes, but usually he doesn't play. And I guess the only glimmer of good news from Europe these days at the position is Eric Palmer-Brown, who's finally getting minutes at NAC Breda. We'll see how long that lasts. They lost 2-0 on Sunday and they're bottom of the table. So
yeah, it's one of those where I'm very like a long term, so I don't necessarily think that Brooks has gotten worse. I don't think Miazga has suddenly gotten worse. I think they're not in ideal situations right now. Well, Brooks is probably in a fine situation. He starts every game. He's being exposed a little bit, and we're seeing sort of what his weaknesses are. But I think those weaknesses have always been there. I don't think it's some kind of a recent trend where he's gotten slower footed. So it's just like, oh, all right, well, it's a nice sort of reality check on like what it means to have a mid-table Bundesliga center back, where he's not a elite Champions League winning center back. This is what the U.S. pool is.
I do wonder if Brooks has lost a step, you know, with all the injuries. He's only 25, but he does look like he could be 35 out there. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just saying he looks like an older player than he is, both in the way he moves and the way he looks. So I do wonder if he is actually slowing down.
Yeah, dealing with some like old man legs right now, and potentially not getting the young man's legs back. It could be a thing. I'm assuming for like Miazga, I'm assuming that he'll find a new home in January. I don't think that there's any reason that Nantes would want to keep paying him a portion of his salary. I don't think there's any reason Chelsea would want to keep him there. So, you know, we'll just have a do-over for him in January. You kind of wonder the same thing about Carter Vickers, but I don't know. I mean, he's at least on the bench, so it's not like Swansea just washed their hands of him the way Nantes have with Miazga.
Yeah, CCV's an injury away from being a regular starter, I think. So his situation is not quite as dire as Miazga's. Yeah, it's a long game. I'm not trying to like overreact to the recent news. I just think there's some cracks in the sort of we have a strong center back pool facade.
Sure. We have a lot of center backs who, and none of them are particularly like close to elite status in the global game.
Yeah. And that's probably true of all of our positions, to be honest. But anyway, Aaron Long, I would kind of like to see him get a chance against England, because he will probably, like Guzan, end up going back after that game. I'm not sure what Walker Zimmerman is doing on this roster. I know he had a good game against Bolivia, but so did everybody.
Yeah, it seems like it is a strange one, because if you were just getting cover for Aaron Long because you were going to send him home, you know, there's guys over there. Eric Palmer Brown's, again, a train ride away. So it is a bit of a head scratcher. But, you know, I guess if he gets a half in the second game, then fine.
Yeah, whatever. Not that big of a deal. Right back, we've got three of them: DeAndre Yedlin, Reggie Cannon, and Shaq Moore. Why do we need three right backs?
Because it's a great chance to have Cannon and Moore prove who is the better of the two for Dave Sarakin, who then leaves the post, and it doesn't actually. Again, it's one of those things where would actually be a great situation for the new coach to evaluate the two of them when you have two guys who are pretty close. It doesn't do any good when it's the last window of a coach who's on his way out.
Yeah. I imagine we'll see Yedlin. Cannon is under no scheduling constraints. He could stay in at Brentford FC through Christmas if he needed to, because he's got nothing else going on, professionally at least. I guess I'd be happy with either Yedlin or Cannon starting this game. I trust Dave Sarakin to sort that out.
Yeah, my preference right now is Cannon ahead of Moore. So all I care about is that Yedlin and Cannon each get at least like a 70-minute starting and 70-minute run out. Like start them each a game and give them at least 70, 75 minutes to play.
Okay. Sounds good. Left back, we have two of them, Anthony Robinson and Jorge Villafania rejoins the fold. Sounds like Robinson is dealing with a little bit of an injury, rolled his ankle in training, and was on crutches, according to Jeff Carlisle of ESPN, in the lobby of the hotel. So he seems like he may be doubtful for the England friendly. We'll get to see Villafania again. I don't mind that too much, honestly. I don't think Villafania is a huge step down. He's a huge step down from Robinson in terms of attacking threat, but defensively he's probably better than Robinson, and you know, a little more savvy.
Yeah, very. I think he'll stabilize our defense, but he definitely will add a lot, or at least a very different attacking style. It's not like Villafania won't go forward and try to play cute little combinations. It's just a completely different look than Robinson's sort of 100-meter track speed.
Right. And Viafania has to come back to play in the playoffs too, so you might think he already had a good chance of playing in this first friendly and then going back home. Though you imagine Sarakin might have wanted to give the opportunity to Robinson since it's in his home country and all his friends and family would be there.
Yeah, and then the question becomes who's going to play in the second game if Robinson's even. I mean, you don't rush a guy back for a sort of meaningless friendly. So if Robinson's still dealing with any kind of strain,
Ben Sweat is on speed dial. I don't know.
You got to have somebody. So if it's Ben Sweat or if it's, I don't know who else is on the list. Eric Lehigh's in the neighborhood, but you got to bring somebody else in, don't you? I don't think it would seem pointless to me to shift over like I don't know if Shaq Moore or Reggie Cannon ever play left back, but that was our old policy.
Yeah.
Was to just throw a, and I guess Eric Lehigh almost fits in that, but Eric Lehigh has some experience at left back.
Right. With the national team. I don't know if he has that much experience at his club at left back, but yeah. Maybe we'll see an addition there if depending on how serious Robinson's injury is. I haven't seen any updates since the crutches update from Carlisle. Midfield. Are you ready to move on to the midfield?
Yeah, let's get to our favorite area of the field.
Okay, well, starting with Darlington Nagbe, a player we both wanted to see in the middle there. He was dropped for injury. Dealing with something with his hamstring and, you know, needs to be healthy for Atlanta United's semi-conference finals with the Red Bulls, which is going to be fun, I think, to watch here in a couple weeks. The rest of the call-ups are Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, Kellen Acosta, Marky Delgado, Will Trapp, and Sebastian Legette.
That's a strong pool of center midfielders. It's a deep pool. There's not a ton of drop off, at least from in the bottom four. So it's not like Kellen Acosta is way, way ahead of a Trapper, Delgado. I don't know if Legette will be thought of as a center mid or if he'll be thought of as like one of the wide attacking players in sort of an Areola role.
Mm-hmm. Not quite the pace of an Areola, but yeah, maybe a winger instead of a central midfielder. Remains to be seen.
Yeah, let's talk about the shining star of this midfield in my mind right now, and that's Tyler Adams.
Yeah, he had a big game on Sunday.
Just the guy looks like I know Christian Pulisic at the moment is our, you know, playing at the highest level. And again, I still think he'll be our most dangerous attacker for some time. I think Tyler Adams is going to have more influence on the U.S. soccer than any other player. I think he's going to be our most influential player.
Wow. Okay. More influential than McKennie too.
Oh yeah. And McKennie's solid, but I just don't think there's anybody in the pool who will influence the game the way that Tyler Adams is capable of influencing it.
Hmm. Well, I mean, we'll see how Tyler Adams deals with, I hate to be the grumpy guy here, but we'll see how Tyler Adams deals with the speed of play in the Bundesliga, you know, when the pockets of space are smaller and the seconds tick by a little faster. But yeah, for sure. I mean, especially on the defensive side of the ball, an amazing asset. And he did a lot of good stuff on the ball on Sunday and has done that throughout his career. He had the assist for the go-ahead goal, which was a late run into the box. Alex Mule kind of played it behind him a little bit as he came into the box, and Adams just gently side-footed it one time to Danny Royer, who thrashed it home past Zach Steffen.
And yeah, Adams put a little bit of like a waist-level loft on it where he managed to so that the defender couldn't get a leg or even like a thigh up to deflect it.
Mm-hmm.
He almost like bent it around a guy who was just 3 yards away from him, make a 6-yard pass. So that touch is really impressive. But as impressive is, you know, I feel like even saying that he made a late run sells it short a little bit. He's like started things up at the touchline at midfield. So his late run is like a 65-yard or, you know, I mean, yeah, probably a 50-yard run. There's just no accounting for him. There's going to be no defense that can really truly like account for him numbers wise.
Right. You could see
he's going to really
you could see the crew defender just sort of let him go past him. And I don't know what he expected to happen. Did he expect somebody to pick him up? I don't know. It is very difficult to account for that kind of movement from him.
Yeah, just racing by like three different lines of players to just be another body in the box. And again, that math is just going to work out for us for the U.S. of just he adds a guy. He's very solid clogging up his own box defensively, and then to just be able to add so quickly an extra person in the attack. I'm very excited to see him in the Bundesliga, and I'm really excited to see him play again for the national team.
Do you think he can do that kind of that late 65-yard run from a double pivot? I think you do, but I just wanted to confirm with you.
Yeah, 100%. That's what he's playing for Red Bulls. And I know he was defensively in that game against Columbus in the second leg. You saw him press really high at times, almost like what Weston McKennie's been doing for Schalke. But make no mistake, he wasn't playing as like a 10. Like when Columbus would have a sustained attack going forward, Tyler Adams would be, you know, 10 yards from his back four, yep, like shielding and protecting them. So he's already doing that. And that's what you're seeing is I think Red Bulls use him very well because you don't make him appear six and you don't just call him a 10. He's there to protect, but then he's also there to steal 60 yards faster than anyone else can steal 60 yards to be an attacking mid.
He protect, he attack. No, that's terrible.
Cut that, but he does both, and he isn't just speed either. Like he does those things really well. When he's protecting, he has his angles exactly right, like he has his positioning exactly right, and when he attacks, as we saw, he's starting to get a little bit, and I say starting, maybe he's sort of already had this, I know you've had your doubts, but sort of since I've been paying closer attention, he looks pretty tidy. I mean, he looks clean. I messaged you during the game and said he had a bit of the Delgados about his sort of short range passing, where he was just constantly keeping the nice rhythm going with the team, and then that assist was just perfection.
Yeah, it totally was. Nothing better than a case of the Delgados for a central midfielder for whom there are doubts about his on ball quality. Let's talk about how they're going to line up. I've lost some of my energy for this discussion. I'm not talking about the whole team. I'm just talking about the midfield.
This midfield, yeah.
But I'm going to change tack a little bit. I just want to see McKennie, Adams, and Delgado in there, the three of them. And I'm going to be officially agnostic about how they line up. Any of them could be the advanced role. Any of them could be in a double pivot. I think Weah and Pulisic provide enough attacking spark on the wings that we don't need a true 10. And the truth is we're going to be defending a lot against England anyway. So those three midfielders are going to be putting in a shift, protecting the back line. That's where I stand on it. Those three guys anywhere, in any formation.
What do you think your chances are of being happy about the lineup you see on
5%?
On Thursday.
5%.
Yeah, and it's Delgado, right? There's no way Delgado is going to be in the starting lineup.
Yeah, I think the most likely outcome is going to be Trapp at the six and Adams McKennie at the eights, which I'm not going to cry a river about it, but.
My only wish, I mean, if I had my druthers, it would be McKennie and Adams in double pivot with, I'm changing my Acosta at an attacking mid to a Roman Gaul at attacking mid, just because I would love to find out. But no, I would be happy with any Tyler Adams as one of as a holding mid, as a, like a double pivot with anybody. If it's Adams and Trapp, the way we finished off the Mexico game, I would be totally happy with that. And even I don't think I'm going to be happy. I think even that's I'm going to be disappointed, because I think it will be, at best, Will Trapp is a six with Adams and McKennie together, and at worst, Adams is the lone six in a 4-1-4-1, which I would also not be thrilled about.
I wouldn't be as upset about that as you. But let's move on to the attacking mids and the wingers. We already mentioned Sebastian Lletget, so you could conceivably put him in this category. There are quite a few, actually. Christian Pulisic, of course, making his glorious return to the national team. so far so good, still not hurt in camp. Tim Weah, he's back again. Happy about that. Roman Gall gets his first call-up. You mentioned him already. You'd like to see him in the advanced midfield role. Luca Della Torre, who is at Fulham. He has not played in the Premier League yet, and Fulham is not doing well in the Premier League. Maybe that doesn't work in his favor, the fact that they're struggling and trying to grind out results. And then Julian Green making another appearance from Greater Firth, where his team just lost 4-0 over the weekend. And Kenny Saif, who played 8 minutes, I believe, for Anderlecht in Belgium over the weekend and has fallen a little bit out of favor there, I think it's fair to say.
Yep, definitely. He's been sort of at best a relief option off the bench.
Now, we've already discussed Amon. That's the sort of the key absence in this group. I guess there's not too much to say about it from my perspective, except I want to see Pulisic on the right wing, Way on the left wing. Would like to see what Roman Gall can offer. If Saif gets to play, I hope he can redeem himself. And I'm not sure why De La Torre is there. I haven't particularly rated him since the U20 World Cup last year.
Well, I mean, I'm one who always says I want one or two speculative inclusions per window. And I guess if that's going to be the case, I won't always be happy about who we're speculating on.
Yeah.
I would have loved it to have been Sabi, but I guess if we're going to take a chance on Luca De La Torre, at least it's like an attack-minded player. One quick question for you, Bells, because I think we kind of maybe echo chamber ourselves a little bit. I guess, you know, we haven't seen Pulisic in about a year. There's no real guarantee that he's going to be the right wing, right? Like, it's actually probably more likely that he's going to be in the center of the field. That's where he played against Bolivia.
Yeah. Did he play there against Bolivia? I guess he did. He had a very free role against Bolivia, as did everyone on the field.
Right. But yeah, I guess in my head, in this whole buildup, I've just been penciling him in as the right wing and Way as the left wing, and trying to figure out how they'd arrange the central midfield. But it's totally possible that Sarakin's never wavered from Pulisic as our best 10, and he's going to play in the middle of the field.
Yeah, then it'd probably be like Trapp, Adams, and Pulisic in the middle, McKennie on the bench. I don't know. Who can ascertain the mind of Dave Sarakin?
It can't be that, right? Surely it'd be McKennie, Adams, and Pulisic. I would be interested in seeing how that lineup plays out. As diehard as I am about Pulisic being a winger, that would be a very interesting 60 minutes.
I agree. It would be very interesting. It's hard to imagine Trapp not getting the start under Sarakin, given he's made him the captain every game so far, with the exception of the one where he let Bradley start at the six against Colombia. I mean, I'll believe it when I see it with Trapp on the bench under Sarakin.
Yeah, that's fair too. It just struck me that we're talking about Pulisic just as he's going to be a winger, when in fact there isn't been any evidence yet that that's where he'll play.
No, I mean, I think you're right. There's a very good chance we'll see Pulisic in the middle of the field. And then I don't know who the starting wingers would be. Maybe Weah on one wing, Saif on the other, maybe Roman Gall, maybe Sebastian Legette.
Julian Green reprises his utility man role that he played against Brazil, and we stick him out on the left wing.
Boy, I can't imagine him that making any sense at all to put him back on the wing.
Well, that's the thing. If it's not Pulisic and Weah, then you either go with a new guy like Gall or De La Torre, or it's two guys who have been very ineffective in Julian Green and Kenny Steff.
Yep. Yay.
That's kind of depressing.
I'm hopeful.
Suddenly we break out the 3-5-2 again, and it's actually Weah and Bobby Wood up top and Pulisic underneath them, and there aren't any wingers. We just go wing backs.
Yeah. I guess anything is possible. That's why we watch the games. That's why we refresh Twitter starting an hour before the game so vigorously.
How many center backs? How many? All I know is how many center backs there are.
Strikers. We've got Josh Sargent and Bobby Wood. Sargent is perhaps doubtful. He was training by himself this morning, according to Jeff Carlisle again from ESPN. Took a little bit of a knock over the weekend in training, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, there was a video of his training with the Bremen first team, I believe. Just a little foot to foot collision on when he was swinging to have a shot.
Okay.
That he limped away from.
Well, that means probably we're going to see Bobby Wood, I would think, which we might have seen anyway. Wood had an excellent performance against Wolfsburg on Friday. Wood was very good for Hanover. I'm going to put out a GIF thread of that. So I don't really mind.
Wood was involved in everything. And I've never minded Bobby Wood. I think Sargent is when he's healthy and available, he should be the starter for now. Because he's going to have a higher ceiling than Bobby Wood, and he's probably already close to the same level as Bobby Wood. Bobby Wood is a plenty acceptable consolation forward for this window. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he'll be doing a lot of hard work in the middle of the field to hold up the ball and play it to the feet of hopefully Pulisic, Weah, you know, McKennie, whoever's streaming around him towards the goal. I guess the one interesting question I think I have about this is, if they were both healthy, what would you think about, if Sargent were healthy, what would you think about a Wood-Sargent two-striker setup? This would be a massive departure for us, but two strikers in like a 4-4-1-1 or even a good old-fashioned 4-4-2. What do you think of that?
I have no problem with it. We've talked at length, and it shows up in every episode because it is sort of the central question, but about how we're going to line up our central midfield, because we do not have a real number 10 in the pool. And I definitely think that if we keep experimenting and keep not finding anybody, just running a second forward out as sort of a shadow striker or in the hole, makes a good deal of sense, especially if it's a good fluid connecting forward. And I think Sargent could be that, or Bobby Wood could be that. Yeah, I think Wood could be that less so, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I was just gonna say that. Yeah, I think Sargent showed in that Peru game that he was more than willing to come back to the ball. Maybe almost had to do it too much. Come back to the ball and connect passes. You know, he can dribble by a couple people and find somebody's feet. He did that beautifully against Peru.
Yeah, so you might lose a little bit of what Sargent offers, on the back shoulder of a defender, on the shoulder of the deepest center backs. But if it's a net gain because it prevents us from having to, again, force that square peg into the number 10 shaped hole, then it's going to be worth taking a look at. It doesn't look like we'll get to test that out at all in this game.
No.
But I think that could be a possibility.
Okay. Let's give our starting 11, starting at the back for the game against England. I'll say Guzan in goal. Any disagreement there?
Nope. I have Guzan starting that game. And this is my wish list. I'm not projecting what Sarakin's going to do. This is what I want to see.
Yeah, same here. My center back pairing is going to be Brooks and Miazga. No big surprise.
Same with me. Yep.
Villafania at left back, given that Robinson is injured, and Yedlin at right back.
I want Reggie Cannon in that first game. I want to see Reggie Cannon with our two first choice center backs.
Okay.
Just because it's not because I think Cannon is ahead of Yedlin, but I think we should see where Cannon stands. You know, I think this would be a good place to find that out.
Yeah, I would be totally fine with that. I'm pretty ambivalent.
All right.
My three-man midfield.
Give me your three central midfielders and their alignment.
Yeah, it would be Adams and Delgado in a double pivot, and McKennie as the advanced sort of box-to-box slash 10 and I'm using extremely exaggerated air quotes with my fingers on the word 10.
All right, I love it. I'm going Adams and McKinney in a double pivot, and I'm going to throw Roman Gall in there. I'm sure Roman Gall's not going to start his very first game with the senior national team. But Adams is what I'm going to trademark as a false six, where Adams actually is the guy who is free reign to go everywhere on the field, because we have cover for him in the form of McKinney as his holding partner.
Okay. Well, McKinney's got to tend to his responsibilities then.
Only when Adams goes flying forward, or, you know, I mean, that's it. Then McKinney just has to be like, all right, now I've got to be the six. Otherwise, right. It's a nice partnership.
Yeah, I would like that too. I'm not sure I'm ready for Roman Gall yet in the starting 11. I would rather try Delgado in there, partly because I'm a big fan, but partly because we haven't done it yet. And Adams and Delgado were, you know, double men of the match against Paraguay in the spring, and that was the last time we saw them on the field together for an extended period of time, and it really worked well.
Yeah, I wouldn't be mad at your lineup either. The only one I don't want to see is I don't want to see Trapp in the starting 11, and I don't want to see Julian Green in the center of anywhere in the midfield in starting 11. I'd even take Acosta in there somewhere.
Yeah, I agree with those. Green and Trapp,
okay,
please stay on the bench.
Yeah.
My front three is no big surprise. Pulisic on the right, Bobby Wood up top because Sargent appears to be injured, and Timmy Weah on the left.
Yep. Give me that front three too.
Okay. Our work here is done. Let's move on to the short corners. First short corner is U20 roster changes. The men's U20 team went 5-0 in the group stage, with some just ridiculous goal difference. They closed it all out with a 7-0 win over Suriname. All they had to do in that game to advance was not lose by 9 goals. And they won by 7.
It was a very pragmatic approach then.
Yeah, it was actually we criticized the style of play pretty harshly last week that the U20s have been playing. The game on Friday was actually their best on that front. They were just a lot more patient and calm, and they just knocked the ball around, and they eventually broke Suriname down. There was still some of that flighted long ball to the wing, but not as much, and that was good to see. 24 hours after the game was over, the CONCACAF website was updated with the roster changes, and the additions are going to be Sebastian Soto, the Hanover striker, Serginho Dest, the fullback / winger at Ajax, and Chris Richards, the center back at Bayern Munich. They're going to be replacing Griffin Dorsey, Isaac Engking, and Anthony Fontana. Three players who didn't particularly impress. Engking got the least chance of the three, I think, to impress in his natural position. So if anybody's going to feel hard done by it, it's probably him. But I think Dorsey and Fontana, they probably didn't quite deserve to go on in this tournament. The only big thing I think those are three excellent changes. Richards is going to really shore up the central defense. Soto is going to be a clear step up at striker, and Dest is versatile and tough, and I could see him on the wing or at fullback. We have plenty of fullback options though. The only thing I think is missing here is Chris Durkin, and I don't understand why he wasn't called up. He doesn't have playoffs to play. He's officially in his off season, and him as the six with Brandon Cervenia and Alex Mendez in front of him is a midfield I really would have liked to see. I think he would have brought some solidity and some calm and some distribution to that six spot, but he wasn't included, so...
It's kind of just like with the Amon business. I just wish the U.S. soccer would be a little bit more transparent about the decision making that goes on in the build up to this stuff. I don't think it would hurt them or their perception of them to sort of give some of those details. Like if Tab Ramos was at a press conference saying we were considering bringing in a couple other players, but their clubs wouldn't release them, or they were dealing with an injury, or, you know, Chris Durkin's trying to make a move to a European club. If I can speculate wildly, I don't know what their reluctance to do those kinds of things is, to give everyone a little bit more insight into how you build a team for an event. Because we could have made six changes, only made three.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's part of the reason for the lack of transparency there is you just don't want to talk out of turn, probably. Like, maybe Durkin doesn't want everybody to know he's looking for a move, you know, again, to speculate wildly. Or maybe Tab Ramos sees no value in saying, you know, we had a deal with FC Nordsjælland, but they backed out on it. You know, stuff like that. Maybe it's just there's no upside to being transparent. I don't know.
I get that. I just feel like it makes it harder for the supporters of U.S. soccer to really believe that there is fully thought out plan in place, or whether everyone's just kind of winging it.
Yeah, it's probably a mix of the two, just like anything, I suppose. Another possibility is there's, you know, that team did start to cohere a little bit. I don't think I'm just imagining that or trying to build some kind of foolish narrative. I do think they started to come together in that last game of the group stage. And maybe Tab's just thinking to himself, I don't want to, you know, a bunch of these guys have performed well. I don't want to send anybody else home. I don't want to break up the team momentum that we have right now. So it doesn't make sense to call up Durkin. That's also a possibility while we're on the wild speculation category.
Sure. And even that would be, that'd be a defensible position. If it were the case, like, what would be the problem then with him essentially saying that? Like, I wanted to leave the core of the group intact, and we thought these other changes would help us. And so, you know, I mean, just, I don't know, maybe they're all questions where the answers are already clear, and we're just like whining because it's not exactly what we want. But I just feel like when you have these instances, it would be nice to sort of provide some explanations and some rationales to your base, to your supporters.
Sure. Can't disagree with that. They play on Friday versus Costa Rica, 7:30 p.m. Central Time, with World Cup qualification on the line. So tune in to check out Soto up front, Richards in a U.S. shirt for the first time for most viewers. That should be an exciting game to watch.
So remind everyone now, they're now in a three-team group with Costa Rica and, is it Honduras?
Honduras, yes. So they just have to finish in the top two of that group.
So just two games now. So they have two games, and they need to not finish dead last out of that three-team round robin.
Yep. So a win would go a long way towards World Cup qualification. It wouldn't guarantee it, but it would be it would go a long way.
Okay. All right.
Next short corner is the U.S. women's national team. Most of you aren't going to hear this episode until after they play tonight. But, Greg, why don't you give us a little update? It's been a little bit more of an experimental roster.
Yeah, a little bit. They kind of just sort of made a few, I would say, somewhat like-for-like changes. They just played Portugal last week. Tobin Heath was out with injury, so Mallory Pugh was probably next player up, and she started as the right wing. And then Kelly O'Hara is out with injury, so Emily Fox is a college kid, and she started at right back. That's probably more experimental. And then Julie Ertz got rotated out, and Andy Sullivan, who'd been dealing with injuries and a little bit of lack of form, came in as a holding mid. But then the big one, I think, is Alex Morgan did not start, and Jess McDonald, the 30-year-old attacker for Carolina Courage, did. And I think that could be one where we truly are looking for Alex Morgan's backup. If Alex Morgan gets hurt, there isn't necessarily an Alex Morgan player in the roster that we would use as our backup. So I think it was a test to see if Jess McDonald could be that player for the next 6 to 8 months. And she probably wasn't. She scored the goal, but even the goal was almost like a sheepish. She got put in clean through and was just looking at the goalkeeper and sort of hit it directly at the goalkeeper kind of weakly. And the keeper just parried it right back to her, and she fought for the rebound. But even then, it was actually a Portugal defender who got to the rebound, and in an attempt to clear it, smashed it off of Jess McDonald into the goal. So So it's not like it's not a finisher's goal necessarily, where you're like, okay, this is our finisher. You know, it's her first. I think it's Jess McDonald's very first cap or second cap overall, first start with the women's national team. So you don't necessarily want to make big conclusions off that, but she definitely didn't like seize that opportunity and stake a real claim to be in the mix for the best 23.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that would have been real icing on the cake if she had come in and lit it up, right? I mean, they're so good.
I was hoping. Yeah, and she'd had a solid season, a very good club season and a very good postseason. So I was hoping that she would just come in and instantly look the part, but didn't quite. So we'll see. They're playing again in about 15 minutes. They'll kick off. So
I don't know. Versus Scotland.
I haven't seen the lineup yet. Yeah, they'll play Scotland. I haven't found the lineup yet. So it's possible she's, you know, we'll see what her role is in that. Most of the other players, pretty well set in spots.
Okay. The U.S. women's U-17 team plays tomorrow, 11 a.m.
Yeah, Women's World Cup U-17s gets underway today, and U.S. kickoff tomorrow.
Who do they play, and what are their chances? I know the U-20s really kind of struggled in qualifying.
Yeah, they're in a tough group, and I still think with these women teams, it's a bit of a canary in a coal mine situation where we should be taking note of their struggles. And asking some real questions about the path we're on. They'll play Cameroon tomorrow, and then they also have North Korea and Germany in their group. And North Korea, I don't know if you're following the youth soccer trends that go. North Korea is actually kind of a women's youth soccer power.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah, they knocked us out of either the U-20 or the U-17 tournament a couple of years ago in the quarters. So yeah, it's not a team that you just steamroll the way their men's team does in World Cups when they qualify. So yeah, it's a difficult group that they're in. They're going to have to navigate their way out of this.
Okay.
And I'm just not particularly confident that the way we set up our youth teams on the women's side that they will be able to do that.
Not as flowing and gorgeous in the way they play as the senior women's side.
No, definitely, it definitely has not been that way. And again, that has been a very recent development with the senior team, only in the last 12 to 16 months. So, we definitely are not seeing it at the youth levels.
Not good. Our last short corner is the MLS playoffs. A lot was decided on Sunday. Atlanta knocked off NYCFC. Knocked out NYCFC, I think is a better way to put it. They were the better side. Red Bulls finished Greg Berhalter's playoff run with the Columbus Crew. Sporting KC kind of escaped with a win over Real Salt Lake. And then earlier in the, you know, late last week, Portland prevailed in a thriller over Seattle Sounders, their arch rivals. I don't know. I'm still kind of rooting for Red Bulls just because I like the way they play and they give opportunities to young guys. But an Atlanta or SKC victory wouldn't be the worst thing.
I don't care who wins. I feel like we are guaranteed a compelling and entertaining round of semifinals, and then the cup should be a great game too. So I'm pretty psyched about the current MLS situation.
Yeah, I mean, at the Red Bulls Atlanta series is going to be really, really fun because New York has definitely had Atlanta's number this season. I think they beat them both times they played. And so the question is, can Tata Martino solve that riddle? It helps to have a healthy Miguel.
I'm excited. I'm excited to see like the Nagby versus Tyler Adams matchup, and we'll see if it's not like necessarily a true matchup, but it'll be cool to see all the American storylines in that series.
Yeah, totally. That I feel like Adams might eat Darlington Nagby for breakfast, but maybe not. All right.
And Jeff Lorentowitz will outshine all of them.
Yeah, it's weird how things happen like that. All right, let's close up shop. We'll record the day after the England match, and we also have a bunch of other content coming, including a detailed review of the U17 player pool, the men's U17 player pool. That's relevant right now in this very busy soccer season because the U17s are about to play in the Nike friendlies, which are kind of a bellwether event where we get to see how good they are and how they stack up to nations like Brazil and England, sometimes Portugal or the Netherlands. So look for that dropping in the next couple days. Anything else, Greg?
No, Bells. We're set for a ton more soccer.
Okay. Talk to you on Friday. Thanks, everybody, for listening. See ya.